From the AM FM 24/7 radio network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It's the Tuesday the 28th. Sorry about that. I had to double check and make sure I was already Tuesday. Still hoping for some more weekend. Anyway, we've got a fantastic show for you today. Amazingly educational, two fantastic stories that you're going to learn a lot from and get inspired by and help get you ready for the tax season. Anyway, great stuff today. First up, we have Ibrahim with us. He is a tax guru. So amazing, so spectacular. He only needs one name, Ibrahim, sort of like Madonna and all of the others out there. And so he is going to be with us. He is with a new company called NeoTax. They are going to help you figure out your R&D situation. This blew me away. Even if you lose money because of the new rules, you can have to pay business taxes because of the way R&D is counted. And so we're going to find out about that. Then Dylan Vanas is with us, young entrepreneur in his mid late 20s, already two significant business successes and growing and counting. We're going to talk digital marketing with him, and I learned a lot from him. I was excited to get caught up on the space, and Dylan is absolutely an expert, so very useful information. And then for the rest of the week, we've got some great stuff coming up as well. I was really impressed with the week and excited to share with you. We're going to talk about the worst word ever. Whatever. I hate that word. We're going to have an amazing conversation about how apps talk to each other. We're going to speak e-commerce scams with Chris Malta, perhaps one of the greatest e-marketers of all time. We're going to find out about the new browser that is designed to make sure that it protects your free speech called Tusk, and other stuff coming up as well. And so great stuff coming up as always. Again, though, I haven't done this recently, so I set aside some time to do it today to talk about the thesis. For those of you who haven't checked in recently or are new listeners, all of that, we have to reiterate the thesis once in a while. And so I'm going to do that. Very simple. Anyone can be an entrepreneur. Anyone can figure out a model that will get them up and running and making $100,000 a year. Now, I can't guarantee you're going to be worth $1 billion or something like that. But we will show you models and people who have succeeded with them for so many different parts or venues or paths of being an entrepreneur. It's one of the new features we're working on now for the site. We're always trying to add new features. The latest I'm working on right now is sort of an index of here are 10 interviews with amazing stories of entrepreneurs who created businesses using this path. The physical product path, for example, or the e-commerce path, or developing an app, whatever. And so we are working on that. And through that, I'm able to look at the variety of ways that we can help you become a successful entrepreneur. And there's just so many different paths that are going to be in the index. So look for that in, I don't know, probably another week or so. But anyway, the idea is that we can show you one of these paths, and with no creativity, we're going to show you a model to follow with very little risk. We're going to say, here's the game plan that's successful. We're going to limit how much money you start with very little passion. You don't care about the product really. All you care about is whether you're successful and make money or not. We're going to take that unique combination and help you become a successful startup entrepreneur. And that is the very simple goal. So For example, today, great guest. Maybe you want to run, or great examples. Maybe you want to run a digital agency. Well, this interview with Dylan is going to give you the game plan to do that. Maybe you want to run a tax agency and you're an accountant. Well, the interview with Ibrahim coming up first will give you a guideline, a path to show you how to be successful. We talked about how he grows his business. In addition, the interview is also useful for every single one of you that ever has any R&D. And here's the thing that sucks. And we talked about it during the interview. Most of the time, web development is considered R&D. So if you build a website and you use it for 5 years, I hope you're not doing that. Use it for 2 years. After that, well, maybe 3 or 4, because I've got some websites that are that old. You use them for a longer time. Okay, you've used them, or say you only use it for 2 years. You're going to write it off. You're going to be forced to write it off by the new rules over 5 years, but you're only going to use it for 2 years. And then you're going to redo that website, which you can write off over 5 years, even though all of the expense happens now. And so we are excited to bring solutions to problems like that to you in addition. Anyway, our thesis: creativity is awesome for artists. Risk is awesome for bungee jumpers, and passion is awesome in the bedroom, but it's not needed any of those for being an entrepreneur. We're going to copy someone else's idea. We're going to borrow their passion for it. We're passionate about working for ourselves. We're passionate about the freedom, and we're going to limit our risk as much as possible. Anyway, we're going to get started now with a fantastic show. As I told you, our first guest today is a man who only has one name. He is so famous. His name is Ibrahim. He is a tax expert. He is the CEO of a company called Neo Tax. It's an automated solution for your small business and startup. And this is the really important thing. This year, because of the Tax Act of 2017, it's my understanding that you can lose money but still owe a tax bill because of changes with your R&D. And so we're going to talk about that. Let's get started. Ibrahim, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Great. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. So did I describe that right? I could lose money and still have a tax bill.
Yeah, unfortunately. It is a little crazy to believe, right? But yeah, there are many companies that are in that situation, unfortunately, now.
All right. Explain how that can happen.
Yes, yeah, so you can imagine they've changed the way that you can treat R&D expenses. So R&D stands for research and development. The IRS defines that as any new or improved product or process. And so lots of companies are developing new or improved products or processes. So any of the expenses that the IRS would consider R&D, you can no longer expense them anymore, meaning you can no longer just subtract them from revenue. You have to spread them out, or what's called capitalize them, over 5 years. And so you can imagine, if a big chunk of your expenses you can't claim as a deduction in this year, you may actually be losing money, but you can't claim all of those losses as deductions. And so you may have a tax bill despite losing money.
That's crazy. What about in the situation where my development is, say, a new website that gets updated every 6 months? It doesn't have a 5-year life. How can I amortize something over 5 years when it only lives for 1 year? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand your question. So we're jumping straight into the weeds, which I appreciate. So the accounting rules abide by what you're characterizing now. So GAAP, which is generally accepted accounting principles, you amortize something over the tenure or the duration that you expect to get life out of that or usage out of that. The IRS sort of just kept it plain and simple. And they said, hey, if it happened in the US, it's a 5-year amortization schedule, or you capitalize it over 5 years. And there's a little bit of nuance I can add to that. And if it happens outside the US, you have to capitalize it over 15 years. And so it doesn't take into account at all, unfortunately, how much usage you expect to get, or for what duration you expect to get value out of developing your website.
So does that mean that I use I have a deduction for a website that I abandoned 4 years ago, but I still keep deducting it, even though it's no longer in use? And I'm deducting one that's 3 years old and one that's 2 years old. I mean, is that what I'm going to end up with?
Yeah. So over the course of, if we just assume in the case of a 5 year capitalization, you end up building what's called a waterfall, which is this year I have 100,000 of expenses that I'm amortizing over 5 years. And then next year, there's another 100,000 that I'm amortizing over 5 years. And then the following year, by year three, you have a little bit of year one expenses, a little bit of year two expenses, and a little bit of year three expenses. And so they keep stacking, which is why they call that a waterfall. And by year five, you have 1/5 of the last 5 years of 100,000. So it ends up, if you don't change your expenses at all, if you end up spending exactly 100,000 every single year, by year five, it's a wash, because any of the this year's expenses that you're losing out because you're spreading out over future years, any of that is being compensated for by all of the accruing of the previous year's capitalization.
It's like your score in bowling.
It just keeps adding up. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Bowling's the only sport that I know of that you can get points from 3 things ago. So anyway, I don't understand that. All right. My God, what a mess this is. All right.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. How does Neo help and solve all of this? Tell us about Neo.
Yeah, sure. So our perspective in general is that the tax law is what it is. And the IRS actually has no problem that companies take full advantage of the tax law. What folks might sometimes call tax loopholes is ultimately just the tax law. And we're seeing in this case, it's particularly punitive. You know, companies are being punished for it. But there are other tax laws that are advantageous. And, you know, like I said, the IRS has no problem that companies take full advantage of the tax law insofar as they report things accurately, transparently, and comprehensively. And so we help companies do that. We help sort of uncover all of the little advantages that you can get and add them all up and ultimately optimize a company's tax strategy, but keeping within, you know, staying kosher and keeping within the lines of what the tax law is. And so when there's a new tax law like this one, we sort of take a hard look at it and think, okay, how can we optimize against this? How can we optimize a company's tax strategy against this new set of laws? And the way that we've been doing it is, there's sort of a few pieces here. But the first thing is, there is also a separate tax law that refers to the R&D tax credit. So companies can actually get credited from the government for any R&D, and we said that's any developing any new or improved product or process, as long as you do that in the U.S., because obviously the government would like for you to build new and innovative things and to have innovative high-tech jobs in the U.S. And so you get a credit for R&D, and then like we just talked about with this new capitalization rule, you also get punished for R&D. And so it's a little interesting. So it's a little schizophrenic. The government is sending mixed messages. On one hand, they're saying you're being rewarded for R&D. On the other hand, you're being punished for it. And you're being rewarded and punished to varying degrees, depending on your revenues, expenses, and a number of other things that, you know, the holistic financial picture of the company. And so at Neotax, we'll sort of take in all of a company's financials and then find the most optimal balance. What is the tax strategy that sort of optimizes the balance of all of these things to ultimately have the best possible tax outcome for a company? And so, yeah, that's one of the things that we do. The other piece is there are definitely some hard and fast rules, but the IRS also hasn't issued a lot of guidance in some of the finer points. And so that can be a little worrisome, where you're like, wait a second, the IRS hasn't given definitive guidance on this matter or on that matter. From our perspective, that means that we have to stick within the guidance that they have given, and we have some flexibility in some of the other areas.
Right. Unbelievable how complicated it is. So, and I'm sorry, I didn't understand this. Does is Neo, is it automated in the fact that it takes a lot of this and does it without me having to hire a tax person to bring in? Is that correct?
Yeah, our perspective is that, you know, your financials, your accounting, all of that, that's a lot of numbers. And the tax law, that's a lot of rules. And rules are numbers, our computer's best friend. And so, they, you know, computers are sort of specifically designed to do this kind of computational work and to run a bunch of different scenarios and to see what your tax outcome is if you do things this way versus that way versus the other way. And so computers are actually supremely advantaged at doing this kind of computational task. And so, yes, to a great degree, it's automated. We still recommend that companies have a tax professional, a CPA, but this portion of it can be relegated to the software and it can do, frankly, a better job than most people can.
Right. So it's a tool that your CFO would use to figure out which strategy to go with.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. In some cases, accountants themselves, CPAs themselves are using the tool. And yes, finance teams or CFOs are also using it.
Right. Okay. And would it therefore be a really expensive price point, I would assume?
You know, you'd think so. It actually ends up, because a human doing the same kind of analysis, you'd have to find someone incredibly savvy and they would need to spend hours and hours and hours doing this work, perhaps weeks and weeks. And so a human doing it is pretty expensive. Software doing it actually, you know, it's able to find the most optimal tax strategy in a matter of seconds. And so it's also substantially, you get a better tax outcome. It's a lot faster and it's substantially cheaper than a human doing it, which it frankly is not surprising, right? That's kind of the point of software.
Sure.
If computers can do things, you know, faster and cheaper, then why not?
And they very, very rarely sue you for sex discrimination, these computers.
So. Right. That's one of the, one of the main advantages, in fact, of using software.
Yes. Yes. They don't need time off for their dentist appointments.
Right. Exactly.
All right.
Although I would recommend, you know, maintaining your servers and maintaining your code so that you don't get any bugs in your code, which is maybe akin to getting cavities in your teeth. But
very
yes.
Good analogy. Yes. All right. So how did you build this? Did it happen slowly over time or did you invest a lot of money? How did the development actually occur?
Yeah, I think it sort of happens slowly. Our perspective has been you need the more you do, the more you can do more in the future. So you start out small, you solve a smaller problem, and then you incrementally solve a larger, larger, larger problem. We'd been sort of focused on this R&D space in general because we started with the R&D credit. And because we were so focused on the R&D credit, we sort of we kept a pulse on this tax change, this one that you were talking about that went into effect earlier this year for tax year 2022. So we sort of saw it coming when others didn't, or maybe they just, you know, folks weren't as focused on it, but it's because it's our area of focus. We kept a really keen eye on it. And so we saw this tax change coming and we thought it would be unacceptable for our customers' sakes if this tax change went into effect and we weren't prepared day one with a great software solution for it. And so we started building it before the tax change went into effect in anticipation, because that's back to the software point. One of the advantages, yes, they never sue you for sexual discrimination, but one of the other advantages is that you expect your software to stay up to date with the latest tax law. And so we thought it would be unacceptable if a tax law went into effect and your software wasn't up to date with the latest. And so we sort of keep adding things on incrementally.
Sure. Of course. And when you were building that, so I don't understand this. Was there an existing business supporting the build or was the build virgin territory?
So there was an existing business on the R&D tax credit, which just helps companies claim this credit that gives them money back on any investments they make in R&D. And then this new bit of software to tackle this tax change that you're just talking about, that's brand new. And then we've combined them together because, like I said, you're getting punished for R&D via this new tax capitalization rule, but you're also getting rewarded via the R&D credit. So when you combine the two together, you're able to balance the mix between the two.
I see. And how are you going out and selling it now in the marketplace? What is the marketing strategy and the distribution channels?
Yeah, there's actually a number. There's, you know, like I said, some accountants are finding that it's quite useful to use for their clients. We have finance teams and CFOs that feel like, you know, perhaps maybe their accountants aren't up to speed on the latest rules, or they aren't specialists or experts in this particular domain. And so they find NeoTax, or we find them in many instances, and we're able to solve this piece for them. And then they continue to use their CPA firm for everything else. And we're also integrating with sort of tax software as well. You can imagine if you're using some software to calculate your taxes, if that software doesn't take these new rules into account, it's gonna calculate your taxes incorrectly. And so there's a number of places that we're sort of plugging in NeoTax for the service of businesses to be able to optimize their tax strategy.
All right. And how big do you see the marketplace as being? Is this something that will max out at 1,000 customers, or does this go to 100,000 customers? And as you said, it's going to need constant updating and support. How big a team would it need to support 100,000 users?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so, you know, the thing about this tax change is it applies to every single business. Every single business, when filing their taxes this year, has to capitalize their R&D expenses. And if you previously had R&D expenses, but then this year you just say, oh, I have zero, it's a little fishy. And there are definitely businesses for whom R&D is such a small, I don't want to say trivial or immaterial, but it's such a small chunk that there isn't a whole lot of value that you'd get from optimizing your tax strategy in relation to it. And so every business needs to do it. Our software makes it really, really easy. But ultimately, the businesses that are going to care most to use a software like ours are businesses for whom R&D is a pretty sizable chunk of their expenses. And so it applies. You know, millions of businesses will have to capitalize their R&D, but not all of those millions have R&D to capitalize, and even fewer of them R&D is a meaningful enough chunk. You know, back to your question of how big of a team would it take to support hundreds of thousands of companies? It's one of the beauties of software and using cloud computing as your provider. You know, Google Cloud, for example, can scale to so many people using your software at the same time. And then it can sort of scale down if there aren't that many people using it simultaneously. So, we're a pretty small but mighty team. And we can support a very, very large number of customers.
All right. And will it continue to add new features, or do you think that you're going to stay in the R&D space? I love the fact that it's a special niche, and I really loved what you said a minute or so ago, that they would keep their existing CPA firm for a lot of stuff, but then bring you on for this niche. I kind of like that. That's a defendable space. Do you continue to grow, or do you grow and fight the niche?
Yeah, I think I don't know if this is a blessing or a curse, but our ambitions, I think, extend into automating as much of a company's taxes as possible. And the same kind of optimization and automation that we can deliver in this one niche, you know, we've already got customers saying, well, gee, wouldn't it be great if what you just did for this R&D stuff, you could do for everything else? How great would it be to be able to get this kind of a great experience across everything tax related? And so, we plan to extend into a number of other things. Ultimately, we care about where there's the most positive impact for our customers. And so it just so happens that in this case today, by tackling the R&D credit and R&D capitalization, those two together and doing them at the same time ends up being the single most impactful lever for your tax outcome. So the vast majority of your tax outcome is determined by what you do here. And so even though it's this niche, it's the most impactful niche for a large segment of customers. And so we've identified a few other niches that are, you know, also very impactful, and that if you piece them all together, you can cover quite a bit of ground on a company's taxes.
What do you think is going to happen at the macro level in the economy? Are you seeing inflation starting to slow down, and they, you know, raised the interest rates a quarter point last week instead of the half point we were all expecting? Do you think that's going to be enough? Are we getting toward the end of this?
I hope so. I mean, I'm no expert. I can comment on what I'm seeing in again, my little sliver of the world. Companies are cash conscious now more than they've ever been, at least in recent memory. And so from our very selfish perspective, if you have a product or a service that can help people save money, that can do it more efficiently, that can take a lot less time, a lot less money than a human counterpart, that's an advantage. And so we're seeing that bear fruit for us. But on the macro scale, I think we're starting to get to a point, and this is my, you know, totally unexpert opinion, where you know what it's like? It's like that arcade game or carnival game where you're rolling the bowling ball, back yep. to your bowling analogy, and it's right at the top and you don't know if it's going to come back down or if it's going to go over the top to the other side.
Yeah.
And I think we're right at that tipping point. And I worry that one of the directions is pretty bad. I think a few other people have speculated that we could be at the edge, at the brink of a pretty substantial financial disaster, and the Fed may be unaware of how far they're pushing things with interest rates. But I think, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens over the next few months.
Yes. Yes, we will. How possible is our dream that, like in the UK, you would and you're done? Could that, if we had the political will, could that happen and work from a practical perspective in the United States?
I think, I mean, absolutely. There's when we sort of started pitching the vision for NeoTax, we tell folks, we aren't imagining a crazy universe. We're imagining, if you just close your eyes and think about the future, this is definitely how your taxes should be done. In fact, it's how it's done today in other developed nations. And so we've sort of taken the stance that we have perhaps less faith than you do in the politicking surrounding all of this. And so we think it's unlikely to get simpler via legislation. And so the only way that it can get simpler from a customer's perspective or from a taxpayer or tax filer's perspective is that there comes along software so damn good that it doesn't matter how complex the tax law is. The software just abstracts away all that complexity and makes it as easy as possible for the business or the tax filer to file their taxes. And so we see a world where you can, you know, even in the absence of legislative reform, where you could have that same experience of just getting a 3x5 card or maybe a text message that says your taxes have been filed and this was the outcome, and rest assured that was by far the best sort of tax strategy that was applied for your situation. We think that's likely in the next, you know, several years.
Yeah, that's a really interesting answer, because you're right. The idea that the government's going to change, almost zero chance. But if the software is done right, everything is hidden except for the 3x5 card experience. You know, the software, if it's right, makes it seem however you want it to seem. And so
right.
It could be a super easy process if, you know, the question is, how aggressive do you want to be? Super aggressive, legal aggressive, or super conservative? And that's the only question the software asks.
Yeah, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what we're thinking. And you know, back to put a little bit more onto that, our perspective, you know, there are companies that will spend millions of dollars lobbying to keep the tax code more complex or to make it even more complex. And our perspective is, hey, you can spend millions lobbying. Congress can spend, you know, months and months almost deliberately making the tax code more complex. And it'll just take our team of software engineers, you know, a few days to abstract away all that complexity. And so that ultimately all the customer sees is sort of that 3x5 card, and the rest is all hidden underneath. You know, I'll give you one more example. I think this is fascinating around specifically this tax change that happened. So like you characterized it when you started accurately, this is an after effect of Trump's tax cuts in 2017. And, you know, he cut the tax rate down, and folks around the room said, well, gee, how are you going to pay for this? You know, where's the extra money going to come from to balance the budget? And he said, I have got an idea. We're going to make companies capitalize their R&D expenses, so they're going to owe more in taxes. So yes, the tax rate itself goes down, but taxable income will go up. And so net-net, we're still going to get more in taxes. But I'm going to put a five-year time bomb on this, and this is going to go into effect in tax year 2022. He said this in 2017. And at the time, to be entirely fair to him and his teams, at the time, no one thought this would actually go into effect. Everyone thought, himself included, that this would get repealed or delayed well before it went into effect in 2022. And guess what? That didn't happen. Didn't get repealed, and it didn't get delayed. And the last opportunity for it to get repealed or delayed was the lame duck session at the end of last year, at the end of 2022. And this is not a joke. I swear, I wish I was making this up. Democrats and Republicans both agree that this is a terrible tax law, that this tax law needs to get repealed. But because they both agreed, neither of them could use it as a bargaining chip to get the other one to do something that they wanted. And so the Democrats went to the Republicans and said, hey, how about this? We'll cut you a deal. If you repeal this, if you let us extend the child care tax credit, we will repeal the R&D capitalization rule. To which the Republicans said, who are you kidding? We know that you also want to repeal it. Stop acting like this is a bone that you're throwing our way. Because both parties agreed on how terrible the tax law is, neither could use it as a bargaining chip to get it repealed.
And I throw up in my mouth. Oh my God.
And so in some case, we're currently the only software solution in market for this tax change. And that's partially because we have the least faith in Congress to repeal it. Everyone else thought it was going to get repealed. And unfortunately, we knew better. I wish we were wrong.
Unbelievable. Ibrahim, how do we find out more? Follow online, hire you and Neo.
Yeah, you can just go on to neo.tax, the name of our company, and it's our website. You can either sign up there or you can find a time to talk to someone on our team.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for the information. I learned a bunch, got a little bit more cynical, and I will send you the bill for that.
Sounds good. It was a pleasure talking to you as well. Thanks a lot.
And we'll be right back. Bye. We are back and still so very appreciative that you are with us. Looking forward to another great entrepreneur. Wow, packed. Please welcome Dylan Bonas to the show. He is founder and CEO of a company called Agency Box. They do a broad spectrum of digital marketing type endeavors. We'll find out more about it. He is also co-founder of Mindful Agency, and has finally gone from being a wantrepreneur to a full-blown entrepreneur with some amazing successes. He has his own entrepreneur.com column, hundreds of thousands of followers on social stuff, and growing businesses. Dylan, welcome. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for that intro. I need to hire you to walk around with me in life.
I do that. I have that I have a whole business that does that. And we can do like special add-ons. Like if you have a date one night, we can, you know, add world renowned lover, whatever you need.
Oh, sounds amazing. Sign me up.
All right. Tell us about Agency Box.
Yeah. So Agency Box, it's a software company that other marketing agencies use. So I run my own marketing agency. We kind of specialize in this world called personal brand development, which is basically taking these people who are successful in real life, but no one knows them online, and helping them create an online presence that matches. That said, I had a whole bunch of people come, like, basically, like, how do you run an agency, a marketing agency at the scale? And so I took all the tools we kind of built internally for my own company, software, project management tools, pretty much everything that I custom built over years and years and years and spending a fortune on development. And I said, hey, why don't I let other marketing agencies tap into this resource and tool and use it for themselves? And so it's a best way to describe it, an end-to-end software engine that other marketing agencies can use to run their business.
All right. So it will do accounting and bookkeeping and stuff like that. Does it do creative pieces too?
So the best part about it really is you can use the platform, and we have people that aren't marketing agencies that kind of sneak into the platform and use it themselves, because you can actually get customers in there. We have a couple different tools where you just kind of set how many customers you want to get and the budget you're willing to spend on it, and kind of like ads, but we do it through automated email where we send out cold email. So there's some tools in there that help people get customers. Once they land a customer, there's some tools in there that help them manage the project. And then once the project's, you know, operating, there's also fulfillment tools that just help them expedite fulfillment. So it's, you know, it's really exciting in the marketing industry. Like, we are a MarTech company. We're, you know, we're a true software company, building it in this software space. And eventually I'd love to have a little exit and be able to sell the company one day.
And it's a monthly subscription, right? Software as a service.
Yeah, we have under $100 a month, and then we have access levels that are thousands of dollars, tens of thousands a year.
What would I get for tens of thousands of dollars?
So that's more for like enterprise level companies that want to jump in and really use the full service. And then with that, typically you'd have someone on our team that comes in and collaborates with you and actually builds the process out, kind of done for you in a sense.
All right. And how do you market and get the product out there? How are you letting other agencies know about it?
So a big thing for us is social media. I got three ways we acquire customers. Number one is through paid ads. We do run ads on social media, Google, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, pretty much everywhere. Second way we do it is through organic content. So I've got about 300,000-400,000 followers myself on my social media channels. Between all my company pages, we've got a couple million followers, and we just have a content machine. So we pump out about 30 to 40 pieces of content every week, and we're posting on social media. Whereas, you know, most companies are trying to post 3-4 times a week. Like, we just have a pretty dialed in machine. And then, so we get a lot of organic sales. Or clients coming through organic. And then the third way is through partnerships. So, when I was starting out, I was thinking like, what's the way I can get clients with the least amount of risk possible, but be able to find my target audience? So I tapped into this partnership model where I basically go out and I find people who have a database of my ideal customers. And I say, hey, look, like, let's structure a deal where I'll give your guys some pre-value. Maybe it's a free training or an ebook or a free trial to my software. And on the back end, anything that they buy from us for the rest of their existence, I'll give you a kickback on. Whether they buy next week, next month, next year, 10 years from now, I created these win-win partnerships where I'm adding value and I only have to pay for the lead on the back end once they bought.
I love it. Great idea. And how old are you when you started that business?
So I'm 28 now. I started Agency Box 3.5 years ago. So I don't know, what was that, 24, 25? But I've been in the marketing space for about 6 years. I started my agency a couple of years before that.
Okay. Very impressive.
Thank you.
Where do you see marketing going now? For a while, we've been talking about content, and I don't know. It seems like it changes every couple of years. It seems like we're due for a change. Where do you see it headed?
Yeah. So here's the thing is like, I never would have ever imagined Walmart, Target, Home Depot, and big companies like that would ever be using TikTok and social media. But now it's crazy because, you know, Walmart, Target, they actually had a little social media battle between the two companies last year. And so it's cool to see big companies embracing the power of content. The thing is there's a lot of people creating content. And so now, number one, you need to be doing volume in order to the way the algorithm works, almost like putting a coin in a slot machine. I live in Vegas, so this is the analogy I go to, pulling the lever, right? And you're hoping to win the jackpot. Well, the thing is posting a piece of content's free. So imagine this. Imagine if you could put infinite amount of coins in slot machines all over a casino, pull all of them, and you get to keep whatever you want to keep, get to keep. That's the way I look at the algorithm. And so with social media right now, it really is about volume and less about quality. How can you create content and market in a way where you're putting content out there, but ultimately not, ultimately doing it in a high volume way? That's one thing. The second thing is companies need to learn how to leverage AI. We've seen AI develop insanely fast over the last 3 to 6 months. There's one tool called ChatGPT, created by a company called OpenAI. And I use it almost every day personally, and I train all my team to use it as well. In fact, I have one writer on my team. All he does is write emails pretty much all day, every day. And I went to him one day. I was like, hey, dude, have you seen this tool? And he went and pretended like he hadn't heard of it because he didn't want me to know he'd been using artificial intelligence to do his work for him. And I was like, dude, I know you're using it. Because there's no way a human can get 10 emails back to me from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. later that day. Secondly, learn to use it and use it well, because I would much rather have someone that's using the future, the tools of the future, than someone who's resistant to them and saying they don't work. And so for me now, I'm not only using it in my company, I'm training my people to become good at using AI and these new tools because it's going to 10x their workflow.
How does it write emails? I've heard of that and I didn't understand it. It doesn't know what to say in the email. How does it do that?
So it is the most amazing tool. I've been using AI for almost 2 years now. You know, when the first tool came out a couple of years ago, I was using it. I'm like, this is okay. This isn't that good. When this came out about 2 months ago, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to change the world. And so the way it works is it's literally just Google ChatGPT.
I've already got an account. I haven't found the email use yet. So that's what I was.
So here's the two ways I use it. You have to know how to educate it and prompt it. So what I do is I spend the first couple minutes just telling it about my company. Here's my company's name. Here's what we do. Here's this. Here's that. Now, given all that information, write a 3-email sequence that tells people about what we do and XYZ. It could be a promotion, it could be whatever we're trying to accomplish. And then just hit enter and watch the magic work. That's the first way. The second way is I actually use it to respond to customer emails. So I'll take that same thread where I kind of trained it and put information in, and I'll take a customer that, let's say, emailed me, and I'll say, this is what I'll type in. I'm going to paste an email here, but I want you to write a response to this customer telling them, one, we appreciate their business, two, we value their feedback, and three, here's what we're going to do to improve the process. I then say, here's the email, and I paste it and hit enter, and then immediately it writes a response to the email.
But how does it know how you are going to improve the process, or does it just make up BS?
Well, in that example, right, I'm trying to be a brief in right. the example here for, you know, everyone's time, but if you wanted to go into specifics, you could literally tell it every single thing. We're going to do X, Y, Z. It takes the information you give it, maybe one or two sentences, right? And then it'll write back the response. And you can always edit and change it and stuff like that after. Right. But it's doing kind of the initial creation for you. And an email that could take 20 minutes to write to, and respond back to you, it now takes 2 minutes.
You know, for business, I learned over time that there's only 10 or 15 emails that I ever send. They're all variations of, you know, something basic. And so I've written those emails and I have them as my signature. And whenever I want that response, I just hit signature 4 or whatever. That's the entire response to that question about, you know, I get questions, how many listeners does the show have? Something like that. And I just hit response 4, tells them, you know, how many listeners we have. Standard generic response. So I guess I'm my own tiny little AI all by myself, huh?
Yeah, I mean, look, you've been using this kind of idea for a long time. Now, imagine this. Imagine, you know, a company, a larger company, and they have one or two support reps, not crazy, but they have a couple support people. But the questions are, you know, this is my company. The questions are different every single day. Well, instead of, you know, we can't make a templated answer because we get, you know, 15, 20 different new questions from someone every day. So for us, it's super valuable. Now, for you, if it's just the same stuff, hey, you have your system down. But I really would encourage everyone who's looking to really grow their business, market it, and get out there in 2023 and beyond to look, at least experiment. And I really would ask you to do that. Go experiment for 20 minutes and see. And if you don't like it, that's okay. You know, 20 minutes of your time.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I played with it and I went to the other direction. I sort of played with it in the art direction and didn't try to have that next. See how I,
which by the way, on the art side, I have 3 pictures in my office here in Vegas that I use creating art, and I took them, I sent them off to a canvas printer, had them printed out, and I hung them on my wall.
Huh. Very original art then. But now you need to sell it and see if you can actually make a profit on it.
Yeah, I thought about that at first, but I have enough things, irons in the fire right now to focus on.
Yes, you do. How do you know what to work on each day? How do you manage keeping multiple balls in the air?
Well, so number one, I chunk my time. So I know exactly, you know, it, for example, today, I'm not even looking at the emails from one of my company. And that's because today I'm chunking it for, you know, very, very specific actions. That's number one. And number two, I have really good systems and processes. So, you know, I've got over 100 employees that work with us. And what we do is we have these, basically we take people, you know, we have a recruiting engine, have really good stable leaders in each department of the company, and nothing really has to come to me except for future planning and strategy. And so I'm not putting out fires on a day-to-day basis. I'm not dealing with the ins and outs of running a company because I've trained and established the people for those roles. Now it's just looking to the future and building the vision.
Have you ever had a bad quarter or a major setback?
Yeah. So yeah, I've gone through some pretty crazy stuff, both on like, not just financially speaking, but also on like the emotional end of like dealing with complications in inside business. And you know, I think you know, again, I'm only 28. I started doing business when I was like 19, and my dad's a dentist, his dad was a dentist. Naturally, I was supposed to be a dentist. And when I said, hey dad, I'm gonna drop out of school to go sell flying squirrels at state fairs, which was my first company, and travel in a you know, an old busted out van, he didn't talk to me for 6 months. And there was a time, I think, when my parents looked at me and said, this kid's either crazy or he's going to make it. As I kept failing and getting hit with roadblock after roadblock, but kept pushing forward. And things kind of changed for me when I stopped trying to chase, you know, money and like success and all this stuff that, you know, as a younger, like millennial, I see online, right? Like the guys in the Lamborghinis and all this stuff. It's like, I don't want to, when I stopped trying to chase that and just focus on how can I provide value? How can I build an audience and build an amazing product? That's when things kind of twisted for me and went on the right track. And so it's hard in today's age with these, you know, this social media culture where everyone's comparing their life to the variation of other people's filtered and edited and inflated lifestyle, and they think that's normal. And so for me, I had to pull away from that and just focus on really building a good company. And I've been through some crazy shit.
Okay. You want to share one of the bad ones with us?
So I've had four rock bottoms in my life. One of them was I was trying to start a new company and I had a little bit of cash flow coming in from an investment, but then the investment turned bad. I went 50 grand in debt and had to go back to my parents' house and pretend that I wasn't broke because I didn't want to admit that I'd failed and have my dad say, go back to school. I mean, that was one. That was back in 2016. And then there was, you know, one more recently specifically, I had basically got into a business partnership with someone who wasn't who they said they were. And at the end of the day, it was an incredible surprise for me when ultimately, you know, stuff started to unfold and then having to deal with the implications of that and kind of pick up the fallen pieces of that and really be the one who has to make the hard phone calls, telling people what's going on, explaining the situation. That's the more recent instance that really probably the most challenging thing I've had to overcome.
Okay. Those are ugly. And how do you overcome that, Dylan? How do you fight back? Especially compared to the other millennials. What are your thoughts?
Well, number one is I chose this life. You know, I didn't, at any point I could go back and I could go get a job and work for a company. But I remind myself that I'm never a victim, no matter how hard things get. I decided to go down this path in life and I decided to, you know, to be an entrepreneur and do what I do. And so for me, I know I'm always in control and I can never blame anyone else because everything I've done is my choice. Number two, I think it's just, you know, one foot in front of the other. When things are really dark and don't look like they're going to ever get better, just got to wake up and like literally, you know, there's a guy named Ed Milet. He's a speaker and author and he wrote a book recently called The Power of One More. And the idea is like, when you think you're going to give up, you know, you're on that last rep at the gym, you're pushing the weights up and you think this is the last one, just push one more time because in life, in business, in fitness, that last rep is where the growth, the success, the happiness, the fulfillment comes from. So when we push that last time, and for me, that's what I've done. I just keep, you know, just remember like, all right, just one more. And then, you know, you do that one more and then you do one more after that. It just becomes this journey of constantly pushing yourself because I do believe the harder the obstacle and the challenge, the greater the success on the other side. And if we can just motivate ourselves from within to push through the dark times, the greatness on the other side is going to be worth it.
Very well said. I love it. That's a great attitude and a great line. Dylan, how do we find out more? Follow online, all that stuff.
Yeah. So you search my company, Agency Box, or even my name, Dylan Van Ness. The thing is, pretty much everything, emails and everything kind of gets filtered before it hits me. The one thing that doesn't get filtered, if you want to reach out to me directly, is actually on Instagram. So I do see all my messages and everything that comes through there. So it's just at Dylan, D-Y-L-A-N. V as in Victor, A-N-A-S. You can go to my website, thesamething.com as well. And I would love to, you know, hear from everyone and support them, whatever I can do to help them out.
Love it. Dylan, great stuff. Amazing story. Congratulations. And can't wait to see how it plays out.
Thank you.
And we're out of time. But we- We are back tomorrow. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a great day. Take care. Be safe. Bye now.